the Estancia La Jolla Hotel and Spa, just down the street from the Salk Institute. There's a Glenn Institute symposium going on at this point about aging and metabolism. And we've been talking to several of the presenters and people who are there. With me today is Mahtab Jafari, who's from UC Irvine. But this is what... You're in pharmaceutical sciences? What's the aging connection there? Tell me.
What do you mean, what's the aging connection?
Well, so most of the people I talk to have been bench scientists who are doing stuff working on mTOR pathways and this sort of thing and that sort of thing. This sounds like a very practical application.
Yeah, that's...
So tell me.
Well, that's what my lab is all about. It is about being practical. So you have these pathways, and actually we work with these pathways. We work with TOR, we work with insulin signaling pathways, sirtuin. And what we do is that we try to modulate them with botanical extracts. So the pharmaceutical science angle means intervention, means therapeutic interventions to slow down the aging process. So that's what we do in my lab.
But what do you mean by botanical?
Well, we work with botanical extracts. So these are plants. These are plants that have many different active components. And we first test the whole extract. And if we see any lifespan extension, and if we see any improvement in the health of the fruit flies, because I work with fruit flies, then we ask the next question, and the next question is which pathways of aging or so-called pathways of aging are they modulating? So it is practical because we are trying to, you know, put those pathways in use.
Yeah. So tell me about your fruit fly lab. I mean, Drosophila. I heard that you have the longest living, unpublished. But longest living fruit fly on record.
Well, as far as I know, so we have a female fruit fly. We have a female fruit fly in my lab right now who is 132 days old. So as far as I know, that's a very long-lived fruit fly.
Yeah.
But to tell you a little bit about the lab, it's a fly lab. So we work with Drosophila. We work with a population that lives about 5 weeks. Four to 6 weeks, and we've been screening a number of pharmaceutical and botanical compounds to see if they can extend the lifespan. And we did the screening work for about 3 to 4 years,
yeah. And
we came up with four.
What
are those four?
Yes.
So to my surprise, because my background, as you said, is in pharmaceutical sciences, so my screening was pretty unbiased. We picked drugs that may impact those pathways of aging. We picked plants, natural compounds. And at the end of the algorithm that we developed for the screening process, we really had five champions. And only one of them was a pharmaceutical compound.
Right.
The other four were plant extracts. So one is Rhodiola rosea, one is Rosa damascena, curcumin, which is found in turmeric, curry, yes, and green tea extract. So to my surprise, so it's not like I chose to work with botanical extract. It's almost like my fruit flies, you know, put me in that direction to work with botanicals.
So let's talk about practical stuff here, because I spend a lot of time with talking to researchers and so on, and say, What's the implication of what you're saying? They say things like, exercise more, do things in moderation, have two glasses of red wine, resveratrol, and so on. I've never actually spoken to somebody who talked about some of the things that I actually do, which is things like the curcumin and green tea and so on. I mean, what you're showing is that these kind of things that... that we do from, in a sense of reading the literature about, you know, getting better and doing all those things actually work. I mean, you're saying, right?
They have worked in my lab so far, so good. Yes.
But to what extent? I mean, how much do you have to do? And
well, so far, I mean, I'm talking fruit flies. So I'm not going to tell you that these plants and extracts are going to extend the human life, you know, human life. We don't know. But we share about 75% of our disease genes with fruit flies. So it's a very robust, you know, model system for aging, as you know. And I have to tell you that my background prior 2005, when I joined pharmaceutical sciences at UCI, was in clinical sciences.
Okay.
So I like to bring that clinical aspect of my work to what I'm doing in my lab, so that when I'm screening for compounds, I will pick and choose, even though I like to call it still very unbiased, compounds and extracts that I would take myself one day if they, you know, if I find any positive results. So, for instance, the four extracts that the four compounds and extracts that I just mentioned, they're quite safe. So, if I end up having positive results in mice and eventually, hopefully, in humans, we are talking about something with no side effect.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that, you know, you go into Whole Foods, you see the magazine rack. Mm-hmm. There's all these ecological living things and so on. There's green tea. There's but you don't really think deep down that they're actually having some sort of effect. You think it's kind of a nice, interesting little side thing going on there. But what I gather from what your work is that you're saying that these things actually do have an effect.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the science is amazing. Yeah, we showed, actually our curcumin project is very interesting. And I have to tell you that my lab is not really the only lab who is showing lifespan extension with plant-based products, with herbal extracts. For instance, curcumin. We showed that curcumin extends the lifespan, it improves locomotion, it doesn't impact fecundity, it is even... protective against heat shock proteins. I mean, we these are mechanistic studies, and our work was replicated by my Korean collaborator, scientist in Korea. So my collaborator on this project is Dr. KJ Min, and he was able to actually replicate the same type of data in a different lab, a different work environment, and a different strain of flies. And in my mind, if you can replicate your science in a different country, that's good.
Yeah.
That's replication.
So how did you? Well, the clinical stuff you were doing before you got into pharmaceutical stuff here at Irvine. How did you get into that? What was the story?
Why did I switch from clinical to basic science?
Let me go even further back. I mean, why are you in science at all?
Why am I in science?
A teacher, some parents, a book, something.
What motivated me to? I became interested in science when I was in fifth grade.
Yeah. Where were you?
I was in Iran. I still lived in Iran at the time.
So you went from Iran to Paris to here.
Yes,
right?
Iran to France and US. Yeah. So I fell in love with science. I loved my science book. I read the book probably the first 2 weeks of my fifth grade, and I was asking my teacher for more books and more reading, and then I started, so I fell in love with science, and then I started tutoring my classmates who were struggling with science, and then I fell in love with teaching. So since fifth grade, I decided that I want to do something in science teaching.
So teaching is a major part of all of this enterprise?
Yes.
In what sense?
Because to me, if you have to be able to communicate your science to the future generation and to students, because they are going to carry the work, right? So you have to make them interested. Or because I love doing what I'm doing, I also like to influence my students to pursue careers in science.
Yeah.
But teaching is a big part of my life.
Why Irvine? Why? How did you end up here?
How did I end up in Irvine? Well, I moved from... I moved from Northern California to Southern California in 1997. Yeah. And I really wanted to be in the UC system, and we lived in Orange County. And I ended up in UCI. But with this position, this new position with pharmaceutical sciences, I like to say that I was sort of recruited in this position in 2005. Yeah. Because at the time, UCI wanted to start a pharmaceutical sciences program, a new major in pharmaceutical sciences, and I came on board.
We need appropriate methodologies to study the pharmacology of aging in model species if experimental findings of systems are to be extrapolated to the treatment of human aging. So, do you think this is working? I mean, are you confident about this?
How could you ever say that I'm very confident? I think that's what makes science very exciting, because you have a hypothesis, your work is hypothesis-driven, you try your best and you prove yourself right or wrong, and then you move on. What I meant by that statement is that we cannot just look at lifespan extension and a few pathways in my case, these botanical extracts impact. You have to see what the impact of these interventions are also on health. Because if a compound is going to make me live longer numerically, but then I'm going to be in a nursing home the last 50 years of my life, is that really worth it? So that's what I really mean by methodologies.
Yeah. So there is there some sense of, I've done lots of these conversations with people working in aging, and as I said before, they're often working very much at the bench. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about practical applications of anything. You're talking about here, being in the process of evaluating your impact of simple, ordinary substances. On the production of reactive oxygen species, ROS, in vivo, and then in involving mitochondria in your fruit flies. Yeah. So this is very much different from what I'm used to talking to. You have to help me with this.
I'll be happy to. We have a botanical extract. I call this extract our champion extract because we are doing very interesting work with it, Rhodiola rosea. Yeah. So Rhodiola rosea extended the lifespan, improved the health span of fruit flies, all those good things. Next question was why.
Yeah, so we went into mitochondria. Rhodiola rosea, what is that?
Rhodiola rosea is a plant that is usually found and grown in really cold and dry regions of the world, Arctic regions. So right. You find Rhodiola rosea in Siberia, right. And some Scandinavian countries. It's an adaptogenic plant, which is supposedly, based on traditional medical practices, it's supposed to increase your immune system, increase your performance, physical performance, mental performance. But I didn't know this information when I put this plant in my screening
system.
But
why did you go there in the first place?
Because I was actually, this is a very interesting question, because I was actually testing a number of Chinese herbs in my screening process. And none of those herbs that I tested extended the lifespan of fruit fly without compromising the health, like fecundity, locomotion, all these biomarkers of health.
Right.
Rhodiola rosea extended the lifespan and improved health. Didn't compromise anything.
Yeah.
So after those phenotypic studies, what we started doing was a very systematic approach to ask these questions. Why do we observe what we observe? And one place that we started our work was mitochondrial function.
Right.
So we look at the impact of Rhodiola rosea on mitochondrial function, and we found out that actually Rhodiola decreases ROS production in fly mitochondria. Then now, recently, we've started feeding flies that have mitochondrial dysfunction, Rhodiola rosea. And Rhodiola rosea actually rescues mitochondrial dysfunction in those flies. It makes them even live longer compared to control flies who are not being fed with Rhodiola.
Okay, so this sort of alternative health kind of area actually proves to be non-trivial.
Yes, you know, I'm convinced that we don't have the science to prove how these remedies that have been in practice for centuries in many different regions of the world work. Just because we don't have the science, that doesn't mean that they don't work.
Right.
So I was one of those skeptics that you would talk to me about a plant doing something to you, having some health benefit, and I would say, really, show me the science. So,
but what persuaded you to actually take on?
Because I was hoping that if I'm going to come up with a plant or a pharmaceutical entity that you should take as a human, for instance, to extend your lifespan or to slow down the aging process, it should be something safe.
Yeah.
So we do have many studies on lifespan extension.
Yeah.
For instance, we tested metformin in my lab. Metformin extended the lifespan of fruit flies significantly, but at the cost of compromising fecundity and reproduction.
Yeah.
So we didn't continue working with metformin. That's what persuaded me to have compounds and botanical extracts that are safe. Safe for human use. Safe for human use.
Have there been studies in which the preponderance of these kind of compounds you're talking about globally somehow match with life extension and longevity in different parts of the world? I mean, so do people who are living in an environment where they get access to this easily, do they actually have longer lives?
We don't have actually data suggesting that.
Yeah.
We don't. Lifestyle is important, definitely, but we don't have any observational or epidemiological data suggesting that if you are, for instance, if you live in Siberia and you take Rhodiola rosea, you live longer. We don't have that data.
Yeah, okay. So go back and tell me again about the route that you took into science and why we've ended up at this trajectory at this point.
Well, since I decided already in fifth grade, when I was almost 10 years old, that
right.
I wanted to be
you
in science,
that.
I...
But you could have done physics, you could have done anything. So.
Well, actually, to be honest with you, when I was in high school and college, I loved physics, math, chemistry, I loved everything.
Yeah.
I loved anything that had to do with science.
Okay.
But I became more and more interested in a science that would impact human health.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I ended up doing what I did. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah. So what's your sense of the way in which science is viewed in this country? Because you come from somewhere else anyway. When he came into office, the president said he would restore science to its rightful place.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do you have some sort of deep and abiding sense of the importance of science in society?
Yes, that's why I'm in this business. And I still think that when it comes to science, we are living in a great country that promotes science, that cares about science. It's very unfortunate that the funding situation is so bad right now. But this country is still very much pro-science and pro-discoveries and all of it.
Yeah. What about your lab? I mean, talk to me about your lab, the people in your lab, where they came from, what their enthusiasms are, and so on and so forth. So.
Well, I have a great lab. I have an amazing lab. I have about 14 undergrad students.
Yeah.
They come from pretty much all over the world. I mean, they were born and they are American, but they are their origin is from many different countries, Philippines, yeah. Taiwan,
Korea,
Egypt, Nigeria, you name it.
Yeah.
And then I have a graduate student, I have a lab manager, and I have a project scientist.
Yeah, okay. Did you find that... this is a question I've been asking all women scientists, and I ask them if I should stop asking this question. Was it harder for you to be a woman in science? Or did you not even notice a difference?
I didn't notice a difference.
Okay.
But now that I'm in it, and I'm in a university, I see that... we are struggling with keeping the number of women in science high.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a struggle.
Yeah. Where do you see this work leading? I mean, what's your objective here? What's your ultimate aim?
So we are working with different plants now. And now we are almost done with, I would say, majority of our mechanistic work. And I don't want to say we were lucky or this is pure luck, but it's very interesting that these different plants that I mentioned, they work on different pathways of aging.
Right.
And I use pathways of aging very loosely, because I don't think we have one pathway that modulate and control aging. I think we are talking about a number of genes, a number of pathways, a number of interactions. So my ultimate goal is to combine these extracts and come up what I like to call I don't want to say anti-aging cocktail, but for the lack of a better term, I say anti-aging cocktail.
Okay.
So I like to combine this and then redo everything that I've been doing for the past 4 years with the combination to see how much extension in lifespan I get and if I'm going to observe the same health benefit, the same health span improvement that we observe with these individual extracts.
Yeah. So in terms of communicating science, I mean, I think you told me you did a TEDx, right? What was the major thrust of that? What were you selling? I'm not diminishing that. What was your message?
So my TEDx talk was a TEDx youth talk. So I was talking mostly to high school students.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that I had for them, the title of my talk was "What If?" And I was using examples in my life where I could have made the choice. And the choice was giving up on something. And the first example I used was giving up learning French. Because my parents, we moved from Iran, they put me in a high school and I did not speak a word of French. I could not understand a word of French. And I could have said, okay, I don't want to learn French. It was just too difficult. But I chose to continue learning French knowing that I was going to move to the US for college. So I used that as an example. Then I used my tenure process at the university as another example of how you struggle and you just have to keep going. So the main the topic was what if, and I was using that repeatedly to say that you can't give up. So you constantly have to go. You just go, 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 and you don't even think about, I cannot do this, or what if I cannot do this. Your what if should be, what if I didn't do it?
Yeah.
So you have to be just very happy with where you are right now, saying that I am so glad I made the choices that I made.
Yeah.
So that talk was not really about science. It was about choices in life. It's very important. I don't see how you can do science without this very important factor. I mean, how could you do science without communicating it, being able to communicate it to everybody, not just scientists, but to everybody, even high school and elementary school kids?
But many scientists don't think that it's part of their remit, part of their obligation.
But you see, that's
to
the
explain
problem.
Explain themselves.
Yeah, because you see, if you don't know and you don't learn how to explain yourself, somebody else would. And from my experience, when somebody else tries to explain my science, they don't do a good job. Because they are trying to, it's almost like paraphrasing my work. So and it is a struggle because we get so used to using technical terms, you know, when we talk and when we explain our science, that sometimes we have to step back and say, okay, I'm talking to somebody who is in business, who doesn't understand, you know, the biology that I'm doing or the chemistry that I'm doing. So I have to really use the vocabulary that is universal for everyone. Yeah. And that's a challenge.
Yeah. We've got some noise out there from the leaf blowers, but let's not worry about that too much. I'm just mentioning it in case people think they're having extreme case of tinnitus or something going on. Yeah. So look. You come from a culture which actually has a very long history. Do you think about the history of science much? Do you think about history of philosophy of science? If I gave you a time travel token and said you could bring to this table anybody from any period of history, any discipline, and just ask them questions, is there somebody you'd really like to talk to?
Absolutely.
And who's that?
I would bring Avicenna.
Ah! I've been waiting for years for somebody to say that.
I would.
Explain. Tell
the
story.
I would love to meet
tell
him
the story.
In person.
Tell the story.
Tell you a story. If you look at some of the medical textbooks that we use, yeah. Anatomy, physiology, what this man did is just brilliant. I mean, he did not belong to that era. He belonged to an era, probably even, he was even, I don't want to say contemporary, but what he did at that time was just brilliant. So if you look at some of his anatomical drawings of the cardiac system, the brain system, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would love to meet him in person.
What would you ask him?
I'm going to ask him, how did you come up with these ideas? I mean, what inspired you? Did you walk in nature? Did you exercise? I mean, what inspired you?
Yeah. That's an amazing concept. I'd love to see that one. Final question. What are you optimistic about?
What am I optimistic about? You should ask me what I'm not optimistic about.
Oh, dear.
I think for the most part, I'm optimistic.
You're not happy at this point?
Yes, I'm very happy.
Okay.
I'm very happy with my life and my work. So when you say optimist, you're referring to work? Because I think I honestly believe that we will be able to slow down the aging process at some point. We may not be there now, and it may take some time, but eventually we will. Because there's really no reason for humans not being able to live up to minimum of 200 or 300 years. And there's so much to do in life. I may want to consider going back to school and study something else, if I can live up to 200.
Like what?
Arts.
Art?
Maybe
why?
I go back. Because...
Do you like art?
I like art.
Which kind of art?
I like abstract, and I also like impressionism, so impressionist art. So,
have you seen that movie of Woody Allen's called Midnight in Paris?
Yes.
Did you love it?
Yes, I loved it. It was a great movie.
There were a little few historical inaccuracies, but so what?
Yes, so what?
It was still wonderful,
wasn't
it?
It was very well done, yes.
Yeah, I just came back from... a session of the Women's Global Forum on the Economy in Deauville, and I ended up spending a few days in Paris afterwards. And, oh.
Yeah. It's a very interesting movie.
Yeah, it's a wonderful town.
Yeah, it brings back memories.
So we are going to send everybody to go and look at Avicenna's Wikipedia entry because it should be more widely known than it is. And thank you. And I'd be really interested to know how these remedies of yours actually work out. Your age deference cocktail.
We've published most of the work. I mean, the mitochondrial work is being submitted in this month, actually, as a paper. Yeah. But most of the lifespan studies and health span work have been published on these compounds.
Yeah, all right. So, great to talk to you.
Yeah, very nice talking to you, too. Thank you.